A few months ago, I was teaching a transom workshop at the Podcast Garage in Boston. David Weinberg was there. David was my teaching assistant. And we were talking to students about how it's important to push back in an interview. You know, probe. Be polite, but don't be shy. Just ask. And as an example, David played this incredible piece of tape. It's stunning. It's a clip from a story David produced for the podcast Love and Radio. Listen to this.
What can you just, for someone that, can you set the scene for me? Like for someone that never been
the
here before?
Scene.
Where we explain it and then what we're looking at and where we are.
We're on the corner.
No, no, that's too much information for your radio station. Way too much.
I'm going to tell them. They're going to know where we are. Like, that's a given. I'm just asking you to say it.
No, I'm not going to say it.
Okay, well, we're at King Eddie's. Yeah. What does it look like? Just say what you're looking
King
at.
King Eddie's off the hook. There are people standing out in front. If you go inside, there's going to be a bouncer. You know what I'm saying? He regulates pretty good. Then there are going to be some people at the bar. You're going to see a couple cute white girls. You're going to see a couple cute black girls. You're going to see a couple cute Hispanic girls. And you're going to, you know what I'm saying? You're going to get your swag on. You walk up in there, and they automatically, you know what I'm saying? You're going to, all eyes are on you. Because you got that 100% swag going anyway, right? You sit down, you know, you order a drink, right? You order the lady next to you a drink. You know what I'm saying? You know, you have a discussion, you take her out on the dance floor, and you dance with her when nobody else is dancing in the whole bar, right? And you make her feel like a lady for a little while, and she doesn't even have to be that attractive. And then they're all going to start like, wow, you know, this guy is just like, you know, but it's with this guy, you know? And they're going to want to have that vibe. And they're going to gather around and they're going to start. You know, there's a science to it, too. There's everything that you can imagine up in there. Everything that you want, you know. You want a girl. You know what I'm saying? You want whatever you want. You want some bud. Whatever you want. It's up in there. Yeah. But it's, you know, it's just like any other place down here on Skid Row. That's what this place consists of. It's disease. And drugs and alcohol and poverty. Yeah. An outside giant insane asylum. That's what it is. The devil's den. That's where you're at. Yeah. You got a lot of balls. You got a lot of balls.
Oh, man, is that amazing or what? It's a poem. That turn, when the interviewee shifts from describing a party scene in the club to the setting outside the club, Skid Row, stunning. My jaw dropped when David played that in class. And see what David got by politely pushing? Gold. It won't happen every time, but it will never happen unless you sometimes push. This is what I have for you on How Sound today. A few jaw-dropping clips. So get your ears on. This is How Sound, the backstory to great radio storytelling. I'm Rob Rosenthal, the host and producer of How Sound, which comes to you from PRX and Transom. That question David asked, can you set the scene for me? That question should always be in your arsenal. What's it look like here? For someone who's listening on the radio and can't see this, describe this place for me. It's always a good idea to ask people what things look like, if for no other reason than they see differently than you do. Like this description of Hell's Kitchen in New York City in the early 1980s. Now, I should mention, you should beware, there's lots of swears here, but this piece of tape, it's another poem, a beat poem. Think Kerouac.
Coming around 40th Street and 10th Avenue, where you take the curve from the Greyhound bus station with, and you see the curtains. Everybody has their windows open, you know. Coming in the thickest, stickiest, sweatiest part of the summer is the height of Hell's Kitchen. You can hear all the music coming out, and the music is plumped and voluptuous by the wet humidity in the air. And the sound is in the air, but it's hanging in the voluptuousness of the sticky humidity and the stickiness and the sweat. those hot, skinny men with their A-shirts leaning out the window with their anemia and their black beard, you know? Like, oh my God. Shouting some shit to bring up the fucking bread or whatever. Shouting down at your wife, you stupid idiot, or throwing the flower pot out the window to clonk some jerk on the head. People swag walking down the street. They'll kill you and they're on fire. They're angry about some shit. And then there's the little preteen prostitutes and gay prostitutes. And on the sidewalk, the black dudes have like tent, maybe 3 feet high, for turning tricks. And that inside the tent is mattresses where they're going in and charging people money to go and fuck or get a blowjob. It's undeniable. It's all part of each other. The sounds, the whistling up, the shouting down, the anger, the sex, the emotions, the sweat. Like all this shit, this, I call it the stew of life. And that's just so refreshing.
I'm waiting for the day someone gives me tape like that. Jaw-dropping, right? That's one of those quotes where, right in the moment, you think to yourself, damn, that's going in the story. That excerpt is from the podcast The Ballad of Billy Balls. It's produced by Crimetown Presents. The Ballad of Billy Balls is a several-part series. Of course, what isn't these days? It's a several-part series on the mysterious death of a New York punk rocker gunned down in his apartment in 1982. Nearly 40 years have gone by, and his girlfriend still doesn't know what happened. The podcast hunts for the answer, and it's a good listen. This is How Sound. I'm Rob Rosenthal. I'm playing a few jaw-dropping clips. And the next one, whew, man, I got goosebumps when I heard this. In fact, it's the first podcast I've listened to in a while that made me actually call someone up and say, hey, download this now. I'm not sure I like the name of the podcast. Ready? It's called Have You Heard George's Podcast? Now, a name like that must be a marketing ploy, because if you tell someone about it, you have to say it twice. They might think you're actually asking them a question. But that's the name of the podcast. Have you heard George's podcast? See, I just said it twice. But aside from the name, if you apply conventional thinking about programming to the podcast, it shouldn't work. And yet, it totally does. The conventional thinking I'm referring to is this. A radio show or a podcast should have a similar sound and appeal from episode to episode. It shouldn't change very much. For example, think about the Moth Radio Hour. Each week, several people tell stories in front of an audience. The stories change, the storytellers change, even the venue changes, but generally speaking, everything else about the show is constant. The theme song, the style of hosting, the recording quality of the storytellers, you can drop into the middle of a show and you'll say, oh, this must be the Moth. It's the same with Snap Judgment. It's the same with This American Life. It's the same with How Sound, right? There's a kind of predictability to the shows, and that consistency builds audience. That same thinking about consistency is applied to content within a show. I mean, imagine if The Moth presented live performances, but one segment it's live storytelling, the next segment is avant-garde theater, then stand-up comedy, then a Shakespearean soliloquy, and so on. A few people might like that. I would, but definitely not the number of listeners the show has now. So the advice that's typically given to show producers is be consistent. Now, the thing about Have You Heard George's Podcast, it's definitely consistent from episode to episode, but within the episodes, it's so many things at once. Radio drama, commentary, musicology, poetry. It's like Snap Judgment meets Night Vale meets a poetry slam. Conventionally speaking, it shouldn't work. But here, let me show you what I mean. This is from the opening to the episode called Popcorn. It mixes tape of George's family recorded at home, along with George's observations and commentary.
I'm walking you through our actual memory. This is my mom talking to my nephew. Listen carefully. In fact, that's the thing. See, my parents actually spoke to us, even when they were vexed and it was just a joke to us. Listen, listen.
Be quiet.
See, my little nephew's stressing, bless him, because his Lego fell apart. But from the way my mom handles it, you can tell she got hella heart. First, she recognizes why my little guy is stressing. Then she tries to make him see the life lesson.
If you do something properly, it will not break. If you do it in a hurry, talking non-stop, looking at Nicholas's, yeah, moving all over the place, you will not build it firmly and it will break. Okay? So what you need to do is challenge yourself to build it firmly so it doesn't break, okay?
See, in this situation, my mom makes a choice. Instead of just telling my nephew to stop making noise and allowing him to carry on pissed off and hopeless, she explains the value of persistence and focus. She's showing him how to manage his emotions, and she's teaching him ways of using language in the process. Listen.
Do you understand? Yeah? So they are not going to defeat you because you have got the super brain. Okay? So calm down a little bit, yeah? Think about it, okay? Then go back and tackle it, right?
See, and everything my mom's saying, she's balancing correction with positive reinforcement. And to do this, she uses little man's teacher's endorsement.
You get me? Yeah? You're the one with a brain, do you understand? You don't just have a brain, you've got a super brain. Okay? Everybody says so. Even Miss, what's that Miss in the other class? The Miss Silver. Well, the other teacher said as well. Everybody knows you've got a great brain for building things. Okay? An absolutely super brain for building things, okay?
See how my mom says he's got a brain for building things? That's because she observes him when he's playing with children's things. So whenever he's building things, she notices the skills it brings out of him from deep down within. And that's how she's been with all of us, very in tune with our strengths and weaknesses. My mum believed we could overcome anything, and she went to great lengths to teach us this. Now that kind of sensitive nourishment gives a child a sense of encouragement. It gave me confidence in my own ability. That's why I didn't let my environment limit me. Because at some point, most of us want to leave the hood, but before you've even formed a plan, you've absorbed all these norms and values. And that's why the formative years are a significant period. But some of my friends, very different experience.
So that's the opening to this episode. Tape from home, George commenting. Now, a few minutes later in the same episode, George segues to the news. Then he shapeshifts. He becomes a musicologist. He unpacks the meaning of some London hip-hop, connecting it directly to social conditions.
Spending cuts in the education sector in the UK have forced more than half of all schools to increase class sizes, urging them to rethink school finance. Harsh budget cuts have also put students with special educational needs and disabilities at risk of being turned away from local schools.
Jessica.
Do you remove a teacher? Do you remove a teaching assistant who may be placed there specifically to deal with a child with a particular learning difficulty?
Maybe why did you do that?
Because he brought my mum. So where is he going? Don't bring up my mum then. Expect me to not bring up your dad, so then he wants to try and hit me. They didn't like that he hit me, did they? No. I should have knocked him out.
There are more exciting things for them to do elsewhere. Let's be honest, some children can find excitement and interest on the streets and in other places, so why come to school?
Anyway, that's the bit that you've heard before. And I hate repeating it, because first of all, for my community, this is personal, and it's not the case for everybody furthermore. But there's another story to be told, one that often gets ignored, purely because it's road. For every troubled young person out in the streets, there's a local producer with a mountain of beats. And from the things some of these kids see on a daily basis, there's enough material for an album of heat. Now, as of March 2018, this country had hundreds of thousands of NEETs. That's young people not in education, employment or training. 58% of them aren't looking for work. Some of them physically can't put in the work. So they're classified as economically inactive, but honestly, from what we see of the economy, obviously they're active. Alright, now to all my listeners who don't like this music, please don't forward this bit. It's lit. Trust me, this bit is lit. Where are you going? Hey, come this way, this way. Song's called Oi. It's by Three Good Brethrens. Ended up becoming a couple of teen hood legends. Well, go on. So if you're not familiar with this song, let me be a tour guide for you, if that's alright with you. I'll show you what it means to us, that's all I can do. I mean, come on, man. We'll talk about more Fire Crew.
Oi, who's that bully for me? Oi, who's that bully for me? Oi, who's that bully for me? The one I'm about to just don't give it to me.
Yeah, this music straight from the gutters of London. No government funding, no big machines, no business teams, just kids with dreams and the ability to turn nothing to something. More Fire Crew was a group from East London. Growing up, I heard their tunes at street functions, and even though we knew nothing about East London, we loved them. At the time, Soul Solid was flying the flag, and the man that had it right in the bag, from the vibe to the swag. They sounded like bosses without even trying to brag. And as much as I rated that, I couldn't relate to that. More Fire felt a little younger, like them youths that would rob you out of hunger. But they didn't look hungry, they looked like they wanna come up. To this day, you can hear the song in clubs, effing up the dance. The single peaked at number 7 on the charts. At the time of recording this, the song's almost 20 years old. And at their time of recording it, the guys were almost 20 years old. So how did these almost 20-year-olds create something that made them legendary heroes without any involvement from big donors? Coming from a poor community, where drug money that should go towards student fees is usually stored in jewellery. At a time where this kind of art was largely regarded as little more than coonery, if we're talking truthfully.
Oi, who's that N-double-E?
You gotta remember, the UK was just about acknowledging the fact of institutional racism. Obviously, to minorities, it wasn't exactly a secret, but a lot of white people didn't actually believe it until the police mishandled Stephen Lawrence's murder in court, which led to the McPherson Report. That was a public inquiry, the first of its sort to admit that the police don't actually give the same service for all.
So yeah, think about those two clips. The one where the family's recorded at home, and then this moment of musicology in the episode. See what I mean? If I played you those two clips, and I didn't tell you they were from the same episode or even the same podcast, I think you'd be right to assume that they weren't. But they are. So look, I'm a bit late to the party. Have You Heard George's podcast came out a year ago. It won several awards from the British Podcast Awards, and deservedly so. The storytelling, the production, it's, well, it's jaw-dropping. George himself is quite accomplished. He's attended King's College in Cambridge. He's a rapper, a published poet. He even wrote and presented a poem for the royal wedding of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. But a question remains, how could anyone weave all that together and still have it make sense? George the poet, apparently. He's what makes it work. George is the through line. He's a kind of stem winder. Do you know that term? It's someone who can spin a story, gathering lots of ideas along the way, and leave listeners transfixed. And there's always a destination. Even though an episode fishtails from one idea to another and from one style to another, you just have to trust George. He'll take you somewhere. Like this extended clip of radio drama from the end of Popcorn.
Oh.
Hi, George.
How you doing?
Really sorry to knock so late. I was actually listening to your podcast.
Oh, sweet.
Massive fan. I absolutely adore the piece you did on the More Fire Crew.
Oh, thank you.
Quick question, though.
Yeah, sure.
If you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
Do you not think it's slightly unfair to sort of characterise white people as a sort of almost homogenous group that sort of universally oblivious to institutional racism prior to the McPherson Report?
Yeah,
not least given that, you know, being the majority ethnic group, it's not something that we would have experienced firsthand.
And don't you
think it's slightly almost disingenuous to suggest that all minority ethnic people had that shared understanding of racism? I was just sort of wondering.
Who's that? She look cool. What does she want?
Bro, it's one of the new neighbours. She helps me out sometimes. I've done her a few favours.
Oh, awesome.
She's cool, but I wasn't feeling the conversation I just had. I'm not going to lie. Did you hear it?
Well, what did she say?
All right, let me ask you this as a member of the white community.
Yeah?
Yeah, you heard my More Fire Crew thing, innit?
Yeah, of course.
Did you feel like that was in any way, like, accusatory towards the white community in a way that was unbalanced? Or do you feel like it was even about...
I don't know. It's its own thing. You know, it's cool.
Bro, she's telling me I'm mischaracterizing white people as being oblivious and insensitive with regards to racism.
Right. She's a fan.
Yeah, she might be a fan. That's not the point, because I'm saying it's...
I don't get it.
I'm saying it's a bit inappropriate. Do you understand? She's come to my door talking to me about a piece that I've made about an experience relevant to my community to give the count. Like, she wasn't thinking about no Stephen
come
Lawrence
on,
before.
See?
What do you mean, come on, fam? She was knocking on my door, yes or no?
Yeah, of course.
All right, so I'm saying what makes
think
her...
of everyone.
Yeah, but what makes her feeling...
She's a fan. She's the one kind of buying the records.
Mm.
Right?
You want something to eat, bro? I haven't got much, just a bit of fruit and popcorn. Popcorn,
yeah, man,
popcorn.
Thank
corn.
You.
Alright.
Put it in the microwave. Power 9? Oh. You know, about that thing, man. She did seem cool, George. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like what she's saying. She's, you know, she's thinking about her perspective. Her perspective, obviously.
This is what it's like when we talk about racism. My mind's disengaged, but you can't tell because my face isn't. We just go round and round in circles, like the popcorn in the microwave, like the next generation about to jump on the Leica wave. I feel you, popcorn. I know what it's like to be stuck in a box, surrounded by corn, like you're bucking your ups, feeling nothing but heat. That's what it was like coming up on my street. Of course you blow up. It's bound to happen when you're forced to grow up. You feel the heat, so you get it popping, because there is no second option. And before you blew up, no one used to feel you too tough. They thought you're too tough. Just like them rappers that start off street and scruffy, then you go pop. People think you're sweet and fluffy. And hear the joke. After everything you've been through, they take you in as a light snack, you know, like that. Not even a proper meal. Like all of the pain in the community suddenly disappeared because a couple of rappers got a deal. But Popcorn, let's be honest. What do you actually contribute? I mean, I know what you've gone through. I know that was long for you. But what do you really bring to the table? Bit of starch, bit of carbohydrate. Popcorn, you lack substance and it's hard to hide it. And that's where you and I differ. Because substance is something this music doesn't lack. Shouldn't be viewed as just a snack. This music's like sociological journalism. But the producers and the consumers' concerns are different. Imagine this potential if we stop pushing this historical determinism and force the world to learn to listen. Problem is, if you don't want to act like everything's sweet, they label you salty. And that's why labels are faulty. I don't know, G. Oh, popcorn's ready.
Oh, thank you.
It's cool.
That's from Have You Heard George's Podcast? Well, my question is, will there be another season? I don't know. There's no mention of more episodes at the website. I sure hope it's not a one-hit wonder. George, if you're listening, more please. This is How Sound, the backstory to great radio storytelling from PRX and Transom. Several episodes ago, I interviewed Susan Stamberg about reporting on visual arts, painting, photography, and the like. Now, up at Transom, there's an article by Susan that complements the How Sound episode. It's called See It on the Radio. Susan is a master of reporting on the visual arts. You can find the article at transom.org. John Barth's jaw drops every time he reads one of my scripts, and that's because he's astonished, not because he's pleasantly surprised. Thank you, John. And thank you, WCAI in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. I'm Rob Rosenthal. Thanks for listening.
From PRX. And transom.org.